This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Maceo Parker left Kinston, North Carolina for the big time with the James Brown Band. Although the story has it, the godfather of soul had to be convinced that the young, unproven Maceo was worth it. After showing off his natural talent and after some mentoring, the sax man impressed James Brown enough to join the band and funk it up. Maceo toured with James Brown for years before joining Parliament Funkadelic and eventually going out on his own. His band's been called the toughest little funk orchestra on earth. Maceo Parker brings it all home to North Carolina tonight when he plays Memorial Hall at UNC Chapel Hill at 7 o'clock. But first, he is my guest on the State of Things. Maceo, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Is it true that James Brown had an eye for your brother Melvin for his band when you were sort of an add-on early on?
Well, no, he actually had met Melvin. I sort of met him and heard him play. I was a sophomore in school in Greensboro at A&T, and Melvin was freshman, and we were playing in two different bands at the time, and it just so happened I was playing out of state somewhere on the same night that Mr. Brown just happened to, you know, come by the little club where Melvin was playing and liked that group, but he particularly liked Melvin.
Wow, that's great. Do you remember the first concert you played with James Brown?
Now, that's a good one. That's the first thing. Nobody ever asked me that. I think it was probably Virginia. You know, Melvin wouldn't know. He remembers that kind of stuff. I don't. But I think it was some of the places we used to play in Virginia, in Richmond. And I'm guessing, but yeah. I could be wrong.
I'm just trying to get a feel. What was the 23rd concert you ever? No, I won't ask you that one. What was it like, though, to be up on stage? Because by then, of course, he had a reputation. You're a young and up-and-coming musician. To be on that stage, you know, with the godfather of soul, do you remember what it was like in those early days?
Yeah, very exciting. I mean, very, 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 very exciting. I mean, you know, you've seen him. You know, we heard him on the late-night stuff. We knew about the live recording that he had done at the Apollo Theater and, you know, all that Mr. Dynamite and all that stuff. I mean, very, very, very excited. And like you mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, to have my brother along or he have me alone, you know, it made it more exciting for two young kids, you know, being from, like, local stage, and now I get a chance to do, like, nationally on a stage, you know, with someone as well known as, you know, as a James Brown. So very, very exciting for us.
You talk about being two young kids, but he had a reputation for being extremely demanding of his musicians, so you must have been awfully good.
Well, we had been playing, you know, we started playing, man, like, what, 10, 11 years old. And, you know, trying to do dot, 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 and this kind of stuff and moving from side to side and all that. So we haven't been sort of practicing, you know, at that kind of music for a long, 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 long time, pre-high school and, you know, all through high school. And now my second year of college, his first year. So we were well adept to that kind of stuff. So we were sort of seasoned veterans by the time we met him, although we were young. We sort of knew what we were doing.
How much did you learn much by being on tour with him, playing with him?
What I learned a little bit was, you know, sort of how to kind of fool around with the microphone myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the oops and grunts and, you know, come on and maybe repeat a tune or, you know, sort of control the audience. That's what I learned from him. I think it had nothing to do with, you know, playing saxophone. All that was.
Yeah. Well, you took that talent with you when you joined the Parliament Funkadelic. How was that experience different?
Different, funky music-wise, it was about the same, but different in. Let me see if a way I can shorten this. We were uniformed with James Brown, you know, dress code and this kind of thing. With George, it was like come as you are. The George thing was it ain't nothing but a party. And when you look at the world and, you know, you step outside, nobody's really uniformed unless you go to some special place. So you don't have to be uniform on stage. And that's his thing. Plus, he would have some of those locker room kind of lyrics that he would say on the stage, too, sort of different from from James Brown. So it was almost like a night and day difference as far as stage decorum and stuff they would do and stuff they would say. But as far as funky music, it was about the same.
Funky music, party music, as you said, all the world, George Clinton might have been saying it was a party. But the fact is the music is pretty exact. You got to get it right to keep people's feet moving, right?
Exactly. I mean, if it's funky, it's funky. You know what I mean?
Well
and
said.
Then when it, and then when it is funky, your neck's going to go from, you know, forward to back like that. Your shoulder's going to move.
Right.
Your feet going to try to move. So it's a party when it's funky. And that's one reason why I sort of like that kind of music.
Now, what did it take for you to go out on your own?
I knew it was something in the back of my mind. I sort of knew that always was present with me that eventually I would have, you know, my own group. And it's almost like a kid, you know, before learning to drive. You know, you just, golly, I can't wait. And, you know, I can't wait till I be able to, you know, have my license and, you know, be behind the wheel and control this. I mean, it was just something that I just always felt as soon as I felt that I would do something musically.
Well, let's hear something from your latest CD. Hallelujah, I love her so. Maceo Parker from his latest CD. He's going to be at UNC tonight. He is talking with us right now on the state of things. How do you choose the music? Because like you said earlier, if it's funky, it's funky. You probably do that to any song in the repertoire, anybody's repertoire. How do you choose which songs to perform and which ones to put on CD?
Well, I don't know what sort of feels good to me at the time. You know, I don't go through no... you know, heart to heart thing, and whatever feels good is, you know, I start with a blank sheet of paper and then I, you know, try to fill it up with something, and that's it.
You know, and you say it's party music. We associate this music with a particular time and place in American pop culture, certainly the 60s and 70s, but this music is timeless and it is universal, don't you think?
Yeah, well, people want to party. You know, you want to have reasons to feel good and forget about, you know, your daily or yearly or whatever problems. You know, we as a people throughout the world, you know, we are faced with problems. You know, you need new tires for the car, grandfather's getting old, and, you know, I mean, these kind of things. The list can go on and on and on, but I'm just saying, we as a people sort of need, to have a reason to party. To dance, to feel good. That way we can get away from the not normal, minuses of that life can present.
What was it like, the music scene, like back in Kinston and Greensboro for you? You said you went to A&T. The music scene, like, what would it have been for you? What would have been the possibilities for you playing your kind of music?
It was sort of almost, except for the college thing, is almost the same in that, you know, you have a couple of nightclubs who feature live music. You know, of course, there's a, you know, the band, the marching band and all that, which is different from what we're talking about. But you try to find as many situations where you can perform, where you can play, where you can, you know, try to further your whatever it is that you're trying to do, you know, with your instrument. And that's what it was like. There's a lot of places, you know, that you played, you know, doing in. So there were like nightclub scenes, and that's what, you know, that's, for instance, that's how my brother met James Brown, because of the nightclub scene, and you know, that's where we showcased our craft, and that's what it was like.
You are playing on the campus of UNC tonight, an event called Still Black, Still Proud, an African tribute to James Brown. Tell us more about the African part of that show.
Well, this is a product of one of my compositors from the James Brown era. This is his project, and I'm just an add-on. I'm just somebody who he felt, we give it a little bit more boost. So it's not my project. It's just this is Pee Wee Ellis I'm talking about, who did a lot of writing and arranging for James Brown, starting around what 60. Ooh, boy, 68.
Back then.
Yeah, he did Cold Sweat and a couple other tunes. Yeah. And so this is sort of his project. I'm just sort of like an added attraction.
Well, we are glad he added you. Maceo, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Maceo Parker and his band play Memorial Hall at UNC tonight, part of a program called Still Black, Still Proud, an African tribute to James Brown. Tickets and information online at carolinaperformingarts.org. Coming up next, mystery writer Margaret Maron knocks them dead again in her new book, 3-Day Town. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.